Hello and welcome to the Death of the Roman Republic.
Netflix review of the 2005 HBO original series, Rome. Season 2, Episode 2, Son of Hades, lead host taking care of our narrative today is going to be BP. Yikes, the rest of us just kind of jumping in.
Thank you for that introduction, Kay. Alrighty, we open right where the first episode ended, and it is Varinus and Pola walking home with the head of Erastes Fulman in Varinus' hand, and Varinus tosses Fulman's head to the floor and just goes to bed. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we get there. But due to Fulman's death, the Aventine is up for grabs, and rival gangs have taken to the streets, fighting for the power and struggling for that power, even going as far as stabbing each other in the public and open eye of the markets. Going back to Varinus' home, Pola and Irene talk about wanting to leave, but Pola won't until he knows Varinus has moved on. And Irene feels that Varinus' home is cursed with death, and even if they conceived a child there, that child would be cursed.
I just thought it was worth noting that Irene is considering, apparently, having children with Pola, which is just like... I mean, astounding. I know women and former slaves don't get a lot of autonomy or agency in Roman society, but the fact that she herself expresses this is interesting, I guess.
We love a good case of Stockholm.
Oh, yeah, we do. I'm kidding.
I do.
Varinus is refusing to leave his bed and just stares catatonically at the head of Fulman, just rotting on the floor, and Pola tries to tell Varinus to let the mourning period end and get a new start on life, but Varinus is just not listening. Varinus feels there's nothing for him to do outside of there and just says, what should I do, become a butcher? Because he is not only the blame for his wife and his children's deaths, but he is also a blame in Caesar's death.
Did he not already try to be a butcher? Am I remembering this correctly?
I'm pretty sure.
I mean, it's, you know, once you walk down that road of, you know, killing your wife, allowing the death of your children, and Gaius Julius Caesar, you know, then nothing, you know, as he later says, you know, Hades will take him when he's ready. He's just here to suffer. But what's not suffering is Varinus's divorce beard, gotta say, which is actually just mourning beard. Romans didn't shave when they were in mourning.
Mark Antony is preparing to meet with the one, the only, the Queen of Egypt, and Jacob's love interest in real life, hopefully for himself, Cleopatra.
She's dead.
Slim chances.
Not my only love interest.
One time I went to a museum with Jacob, and there was an exhibit with the mummy that said, this is a person's remains, please don't photograph. I later saw that on Jacob's Snap story. So she's out there somewhere, maybe.
So Jacob has a type.
But the love of Jacob's life, Cleopatra, he is getting ready to meet with her. Attia is not really happy about this meeting. And to calm her down, Antony describes Cleopatra as a dark, skinny little thing who talks too much. Octavian tries to talk to Antony about the money that was mentioned in Caesar's will, but being a typical bureaucrat with his own ideas, he pushes his questions to the side, saying he's dealing with all the paperwork and lawyering of it all, and that it just takes time. When Cleopatra arrives, Antony makes a comment about how less subdued she is compared to the last time they saw each other, even though she does not recall meeting him. Granted, though, it was a very long time ago, and the uniforms all looked the same.
Their initial exchange, I did want to quote it. Antony said, "You've changed since last we met." Cleopatra says, "Have I seen you before? And I need a woman in my life like that so bad."
to put you in your
one
place like that?
That just doesn't care about me at all.
Indeed, indeed.
But she will soon care about Mark Antony, as we will learn. There is a negotiation about how the Council of Rome, aka Mark Antony, will have armies for her throne's protection in exchange for the value of her grain shipments. Posca wants to raise the price higher, but there is eventually a compromise for the pricing of all this. and Cleopatra also asked for a public declaration of her son Caesarion's paternity simply for his happiness, as she has to tell him that his father's people do not accept him as a true legal son.
There's a lot going on here.
Yeah.
First, Posca, what are you doing, man? You're free. Why is he still doing this?
I think they said it in the last episode that he technically isn't, because the will hasn't officially been approved.
Yeah, and so he is
still technically under Caesar.
But my understanding was that would only be ratified if, like, Brutus didn't denounce Caesar as a tyrannical leader. And obviously that is what happened. And like, as we'll find out later in the episode, this is way into the weeds for such a small thing, but not important. But like, we find out in the episode, like, Octavian is due his money and hasn't got it. And it's not because the will hasn't been ratified. It's because Anthony's being a pain in the ass. So I think Posca talks about getting paid later on in the episode. So
I was going to bring that up when we got there.
All I was trying to point out is he just chose to do this still, but now to actually make money, which I guess makes sense.
I mean, you know, do you think you could say no to the big dog?
The big dog was big in this episode. I'd have a hard time. That wasn't even my main point I want to talk about. I droned on forever. There was just a really good quote in exchange between Cleopatra and Mark Antony, where she, you know, she looks him up and down and they're negotiating, and she says, "You have a changeable look about you." And then later on, after something else, she says, "You see, very changeable." It's like, oh.
Well, the actual maybe intentions of Cleopatra, like, it's probably worth talking about here right now, I guess, you know, as BP relayed, ostensibly Cleopatra's just saying, you know, I just want Caesarion to be an acknowledged son because, you know, the Romans don't accept Caesarion at the present. He has no legal rights. I just want the boy to know of his father's people a little bit, I guess. Mm-hmm. And yet, should that occur, there's some very large political implications with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She trying to be like Adia.
The rightful heir.
And of course, Cleopatra also offers, besides the grain shipments and the bribes that we shall pay to the consul, in so many words, she says that Antony would have her eternal gratitude. And then Antony whispers something in her ear. Gorsh only knows what.
Yeah, after the good old whisper in the ear, not knowing what is said, but it offers in a result of him being slapped by Cleopatra, with a good exchange between the two of them after. Nice manners for a whore. If I must prostitute myself for the good of my country and my family, I will. But the customer pays first, does he not? And Antony just firing back, your son will eat and die before I make him legal.
Cleopatra doesn't, like, slap him immediately, though, after, like, him whispering in her ear. It's when he touches her. So, like, Cleopatra is on board with whatever sulky, erotic things he's whispering in her ear, but it's the, like, being touched, like, out of order is what sets her off.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, I need her.
As Cleopatra leaves, a group of people are wanting to meet with Mark Antony outside. As Cleopatra walks away, though, she sees one Polo, and they make eye contact, so hopefully she remembers him from that one night.
And no, she knows all. That glance is so knowing. Mm-hmm. That glance is so knowing. Because, I mean, we have the dramatic irony of this all. We know it's probably not actually Julius Caesar's son. It's, like, mm-hmm. most likely Polo in this situation. If not fully confirmed, I can't remember how that specific episode ended, but it's, like, at least heavily, heavily implied. Which makes this all even more dramatic and ooh-ah.
Antony is meeting with constituents. A representative of the merchants complains about the violence that the Aventine are killing the markets, and they are doing killings on the streets. And Cicero jumps in and warning that Whoever controls the Aventine controls the docks and the grain supply, and if the violence spreads, the whole city will descend into chaos and famine. And this is, to me, is the funniest moment of the episode, because Cicero goes on the thing saying that Antony would get the blame, even though he is not the one to blame technically, and Antony is just like, why are you even here? And Cicero's just like, you summoned me, and he's like, oh yes, that. After this, he is presenting Cicero with a list of candidates for next year's election, claiming Posca found them among Caesar's papers. Cicero is thinking the list contains every person in the city who paid off Posca, as everything comes up kind of conveniently for him. And after a threat from Antony saying, I may need you today, but I may not need you tomorrow, Cicero agrees to endorse them, but only if they cross off the worst of the lot.
I think Cicero also implicates Antony a little bit in accepting bribes, to which Antony implicates Posca, but...
No, I think it was something like that. Like, I think he's straight up, like, without saying it, he's accusing, like, he's saying, like, oh yeah, these are all people you have in your pocket, like, you paid all these people, and he's like, are you saying I paid these people? And he's like, no, of course not. He's like, oh, maybe Posca did, or blah, blah, like, it's like... Yeah, it's like it's being deflected to Posca. But also, I want to say it. My respect for Cicero went up a couple of notches with this scene, because he was not having any Mark Antony's nonsense. Or he's like, I don't fear you, like, because you need me. He's like, I may not need you tomorrow. He's like, then I'll worry tomorrow.
That's good. That's a good quote. That's good, my boy.
Mark Antony sees Polo as he is leaving and talks about Varinus and how he needs help from the Council of Rome, and it is to help Varinus get out of the mourning period. Polo even does the soldier gesture to Antony, which when he sees him, out of respect and habit.
I believe the soldier gesture is called a salute, BP.
Let me have my vocabulary, Lorenzo. All right. Antony.
Wait, have we ever said Cole's last name on the podcast? Are we gonna fully dox him, give away all his name?
Yes,
why not.
Antony accompanies Polo back to Varinus's, jarring his former soldier out of his funk. He reprimands Varinus, accusing him of letting our great father die and starting a war for the Aventine by killing Thulman. Antony wonders why Varinus doesn't just kill himself, and Varinus insists that he would kill himself, but this is his master. He's at the mercy of God to end his life, and Antony responds by just stating, this is not your master. I am your master. And despite Varinus's protest saying no man can ever earn redemption, Big Dog Mark Antony insists that no man is beyond redemption, not even Varinus.
This moment, Mark Antony had two very notable scenes of sexual tension in this episode. The first one with Cleopatra, and then also here, he gets really close to Varinus, and I'm like, oh my God, they're going to kiss. Like, it was palpable. And then,
it wasn't just me.
But even then, right after that, he's like the most empathetic we've ever seen him, like ever. He's like, you two, Varinus, are capable of redemption. I'm like, that's undoubtedly the kindest thing I've heard him say.
I don't know that Mark Antony actually means the whole redemption thing. I feel like he just understands Varinus is a valuable piece to have on the board, and he wants to have him at full effectiveness.
Yeah, and I meant to mention this. He, like, is visibly, I think, taxed through a lot of these scenes. Like, he's now basically running Rome, and he has to delegate, and he has to, like, you know, micromanage all these things. And, like, the position of power and responsibility, like, you can really tell it's wearing on him. He's, like, mad at everything, and, yeah, just little things, and, yeah.
In the next scene, he says, leading the city is not as fun as he had hoped.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he does say that, and... In the scene, he is in the bathtub with Adia, so even more possible sexual tension happening within Mark Antony's life.
True, actually.
She asks him about Cleopatra, and he makes some jokes, And he just says, I didn't do anything, even though he did touch her.
I wanted to note the Adia Antony bath scene and just really talk about the shot composition. This will be the only time I talk about it, because I think it's just very interesting that Antony and Adia are in the bath together, but they are shot completely like mirroring each other, and they both have like candles dancing in the background behind them. There's the water reflection rippling on their face, and I think it represents that they are very mutable and constantly shifting creatures and not together. They are not like side by side hanging out in the bath. They're mirroring each other, opposite of each other, and I think that was an interesting choice. And that's all I want to say.
Good point. As Adia prepares to host a party for the Egyptians, Octavian walks and spots Timon and his henchmen armed for battle. He finds Octavia, who is really not doing a whole lot in this episode. She's walking around and eating food and talking about food. That's all she really does. And he's asking her where their mother is. Adia is there and is offering quote-unquote peace to Servilia, as Servilia knows it would be rude to not accept it in public. After this, Octavian confronts Adia about Timon, which, as he suspects, involves killing Servilia. When he threatens to go to Mark Antony, and they do, and there's just this funny little exchange of Mark Antony just being like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Adia goes over to Timon and sends him away.
Yeah, and in Octavian's exchange with Adia, his mother, he says to her, you're being childish, says him, the child. But importantly, correctly, Adia is being childish. And
she's about to throw the whole city into chaos over a petty rivalry.
Yeah, one of many moments of maturity we see from the young heir to Caesar.
Yes.
I gotta say, Octavian was really cooking this episode.
Oh boy.
Him and Mark Antony were just standing out in this episode compared to the previous ones.
For good reason.
Yeah. Cleopatra arrives. As she arrives, Antony is saying her titles in the introduction, and she says to stop. They will be informal, like they're all friends. She is introduced to Adia, and we see Caesarion. Antony says that the resemblance between Caesarion and Julius Caesar is uncanny, but Adia is like, he looks nothing like him. And
she knows.
Maybe this is really.
She knows.
Yeah.
Ooh, wait, real quick. Sorry. I'm so sorry to interrupt. I've started playing this game with myself where I'm writing down the timestamps at any time I think to myself, I hope Adia dies. 2751, around there, roughly, is the first one for this
is
episode.
Is it roughly any time Adia enters a scene?
Yeah, it's weird. It really aligns super well with when she has major monologue moments. But yes, press on to this lovely moment with Timon's family.
Timon returns home to find a surprise visitor, his brother Levi, who is an observant Jewish man from Jerusalem, resurfacing after 9 years. Levi claims he is in Rome to expand his business where the money is. Timon, of course, doesn't believe this is the reason, and Levi eventually concedes that he has been forced to leave his homeland as he spoke too freely about his views. After saying all of his opinions, Timon tells his brother to stop talking and won't be allowed to say his opinions in his house. He's got a wife and kids around. He doesn't like what he's hearing around this.
I would watch a sitcom based on the family of Timon. I don't know. There was something about it when he entered the door and his brother was just like playing with his children. I was like, this is lovely. This could be the rest of the show and I'd be happy.
I know it took like a year's break between like watching season one and now here. Did you guys have any guess at all that Timon had a family that we would meet for some reason?
Okay. Well, wait. No, this is an important thought I have on this episode. Sorry, BP. I don't mean to cut you off, but this episode weirdly meanders and has us like get into the lives or just like small moments of like these super minor characters we know nothing about. Like this happens two more times in this episode, in my opinion. I'm like, what is happening? Why is this person here all of a sudden? But yeah, I was definitely caught off guard by this.
Yeah, I also was like, I kind of just like assumed Timon was just like lurking in some alleyway waiting for Adia to call on him at all moments.
He effectively is, and he's like just cheating on this very lovely, faithful woman, like a lot.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to bring up, is the fact that in the very first episode, him and Addie are hooking up during our dinner scene. It is clear that Cleopatra is making Addie very jealous with her beauty and her affection towards Mark Antony. After the dinner, Cleopatra makes a scene as she leaves, telling Antony she shall weep till she sees him again, and turning to Addia, saying she has found a lifelong friend. She demands a kiss. As they are kissing, Addia whispers into this monarch's ear, "Die screaming, you pinchbon troll up," and Antony is in for just one rough night.
38-33.
As the gang war escalate in the Aventine, the priests of Concord call a summit. Six captains of the underworld, each with their own band of henchmen, gather before the priests and their statue of Concordia, goddess of harmony.
I'm so sorry, BP. I gotta stop you. We gotta rewind just a little bit, because you know what happens before then? They're pulling bodies out of that fountain, right? You remember?
Oh, yeah, that's right. The bodies, one's dead, one's in the body bag with all the snakes.
Do you see those snakes? Do you guys see those snakes? What do you think about those snakes?
Well, I assumed they would drown.
Let me ask you a series of questions about these snakes.
I assumed at least one was venomous, probably all of them.
You would think they're venomous, right? That's the implication of throwing a body in a bag of snakes. Now, these snakes, do you think they're native to the Italian peninsula?
I'm going to guess no.
You would think they would be, but they are not. They are not. What type of snake do you guys think this might be? I don't know if you know many snakes, but they showed enough snake. I am able to tell with like 95% confidence what this is.
Water, I mean, they moccasin. Were kind of orange and black, right?
Yeah, they were orange. They were not water moccasins. They were non-venomous, the snakes in this bag.
I couldn't remember if water moccasins were venomous or not.
Yeah.
What's the rhyme? Orange and yellow kill a fellow or something?
On,
it's like,
red and black.
I thought it was the non-venomous version of those in North America, maybe.
No.
Are they from Egypt?
No, these are snakes that are native to Southeast United States. This is Pantherophis guttatus, or the corn snake.
Really?
They just threw like five corn snakes, which are just a common pet, in this bag, which makes sense. I understand why they can't throw real dangerous snakes in a bag with an actor, but like, I'm just saying, I noticed.
There's also that meme, though, where it's like, what if we switched Italy and Florida? So this, you know, HBO's Rome could just be like, Florida is Italy or something like that. And then that'll, you know, a lot adds up.
That newscaster in the show really makes it seem like they're in Florida and not Italy.
Oh, he seems pretty Italian.
There are six captains of this underworld. Each of them have their own band of henchmen. They gather with the statue of Concordia, the goddess of harmony. An alliance has formed between the two biggest gangs, and across from them are a group of four smaller gangs, but they stand in equal numbers against the two gangs. Varinus and Polo arrive in this grand way after a quick scene with Polo doing a good old shave on Varinus. I wish I had a friend like that in my life. Just give me a good shave when
I need it. Their friendship is so nice. I think it's my favorite part of the show.
That and Octavian and Polo's dynamic. Varinus announces that he speaks under the authority of Mark Antony, who declares their battle to control the Aventine finished. All violence will cease. Varinus claims the captaincy of the Aventine as the killer of Fulman, and there are some leaders that share that Varinus has no men, but Varinus replies that he will find men, as there's no shortage of criminal scum in Rome, or even that he will take some of their men. As the men stir into protest, they are reminded that the goddess is present, so there should be no disorder. And when order is restored, Varinus explains that they'll receive a monthly stipend of 5,000 denarii from Mark Antony under Varinus' supervision. In return, they will limit themselves to their traditional liberties and malpractices, nothing that will disrupt trade or politics. One of their leaders objects to these terms, and with this, Varinus pushes aside the priest and grabs the goddess, then smashes the statue against a pillar until it shatters. The captains and horrified priests look on in astonishment. I am a son of Hades. I Concord in her. The truce is raised. Polo panics, but they immediately agree to the terms. Goat moment right here.
Loves to specifically quote scenes with swearing in them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My favorite part of the scene was Polo freaking out when when Verena smashed Concordia, just because Polo, all things considered, is actually a relatively religious person. Like the very first episode, he's praying to the god of, I don't know, locks or something to get him out of there. And then he's talking about curses. They didn't sacrifice an animal or anything like that. So this lines up for his character. And it's interesting, like, him horrified that Varinus is going off the deep end.
Well, okay, I was going to talk about this later, but while it's topical, because again, like later in the episode, I think as it's about to close, like Polo's talking to Varinus, and Varinus is like, oh, blah, 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 I'm son of Hades or whatever. And it's like, the gods don't like it when, you know, mortal men, you know, like, I don't know, invoke their name or act in their favor, whatever. Varinus is like, oh, what more bad could happen to me? Look at my life, blah, blah, blah. And Polo's like, I hope not to see, right? And it feels like foreshadowing, right? Because we've actually been doing a good job of paying attention to all these moments where the characters in Rome are like, you know, praying to gods and like, you know, being devout. And most of the time, what they pray to comes to fruition. Like, you know, Polo gets freed and gets lucky, and that's in like episode one or whatever. But like throughout the show, like the gods, when the people ask of the gods, typically happens. And so Varinus like being like, I'm the son of Hades, and Polo being like, don't do that, seems to me like some very ominous foreshadowing for the path of our now very, very changed Varinus.
I lost my train of thought because of how well spoken Jacob was.
Not well spoken, just too verbose.
Yeah, many words don't make good talk.
Antony continues to defend himself, saying he did not touch Cleopatra when he is having breakfast with Attia the next morning. Octavian seeks out Mark Antony one more time to remind him about his inheritance. He intends to give the money to the citizens, as Caesar promised them. Antony explains that this is a bad idea because if they'll just spend it, they'll continue to ask for more without any delay. And Octavian explains that he has enlisted a lawyer to help Pasca transfer the money without any further delay or Antony just being in the way, which obviously that upsets Mark Antony, who tells him he is going to get none of his inheritance. And Attia tries to reason with him, but Octavian is not having it, even remarking, saying Antony is not family when Attia says he is. But again, Octavia really comes in. She's only commenting on the food, and she is the foodie for this episode.
This was my funniest part of the episode. Just like this scene, Octavia could not care less about this conversation. Like, she's just like, yeah, can you pass me the fruit salad? And then like Antony gets up and storms away, and she's like, man, they really didn't put a lot of figs in this. And it's like, okay, Octavia, you're just having your own little thing here.
It's so cool how indifferent she is to Mark Antony. I think that rules.
Outside of Attia's home, a young boy is beaten by a pack of larger men. Antony skirts out of the way, trying to just not get involved. Castor breaks up the fight. The boy thanks him and begs Castor for work, offering to do anything, including sexual favors. And it is very likely that Castor accepted this offer based on his facial expression.
What is happening here? Why did this scene happen? I thought something would come of this, and it is the only time this kid is in the episode.
I was also really confused about it.
Also, me later on this will come back.
It was just so quick. Do you guys want to know who I thought this boy was, though, when I first saw him? And I might be correct on this, honestly.
Go for it.
I thought it was the boy that Verena allegedly had a child with.
That's also what I was thinking.
Yeah, and like, I don't know, because I thought he went off to like work on some farm, and maybe the farm went under, and now he's back, and he's offering services.
While we're talking about boys in Verena's life, there was little Lucius, but didn't... Okay, this is like deep cut. wasn't there like a Gallic slave boy, which was like the only one to survive illness that went through that was also in their household? Like, I don't know, guys, he might just be gone. Like,
I forgot about that little boy.
Octavian later shares with Octavia his secret plans. He sees the Republic collapsing and how everyone in the Senate is basically weak and the people are hungry and angry. And Antony is nothing but a destructive brute. Octavian says there needs to be new leadership, and he is the one to lead it. Octavia just laughs it off until she realizes that he is serious. The newsreader reads the announcement about Caesar's will and that Octavian is named his legal son and heir and plans to get the money to the people as Caesar promised. Antony and Attia confront Octavian in his room after hearing the news, and there is a lot of chaos that ensues within this moment. Octavian tries to assure Antony that the offering was not meant to be a direct challenge to his authority, claiming he wants to make a public display of unity. And as his name, aka Caesar's name, can offer Antony protection in the Senate. But Antony is not happy with this decision, of course, and Antony learns that Octavian was able to borrow against the money given his legal claim. He is ready to attack Octavian. And then when Attia hears how much money he's given away, 3 million sesterce, she jumps into this too. And then watching Antony unleash all of his fury on this small boy, quote unquote small, he's kind of tall now, Attia finally tries to stop him. Attia gets ready and calls him a little and Octavian responds by calling Attia a and Antony gets to the point of choking him and nearly killing Octavian when Octavia intervenes and saves the moment. This was just a lot of chaos happening, but it was a very entertaining watch.
I was happy this entire scene. I wrote, same. Let's go! And I wrote, yeah, Octavian. And then I underlined it. And then another thing happened. And I underlined it again. I was like, this is an absolute win. This is the birth of something grand, you guys.
Sorry, a win for who specifically, Jacob? Like, just you or like?
This is a win for us. This is a win for Octavian. We're seeing something big is happening.
Most importantly, it's an L for Attia.
Yes. Yeah, most importantly.
Well, this scene, it's got like the energy of like, you know, a Breaking Bad scene where you can add a laugh track behind it and it's like it's actually hilarious. This scene is kind of similar. Some of the other funny moments is after Octavian insults his mother, Antony literally like Superman leaps on the bed to get some propulsion to just neck grab Octavian and beat the crap out of this teenager. And it's God, Octavian has like two outs. If he just shuts up, Antony will stop beating the crap out of him, but he won't. Antony just keeps going.
At the tavern, the Aventine Tavern, Varinus is going into Fulman's former office and Polo begins interviewing applicants for jobs in the Collegium, and a woman named Gaia enters, impressing Polo. She is demanding a lot of things. She is a former supervisor at a brothel who kept the customers in line. She negotiates a similar job with better pay. And then Massius, a former soldier from the 13th, arrives, and he is just wanting work. He had all this land and said it wasn't really working out very well. And Polo tries to warn him. He says this isn't something that you would want to do. It's questionable, but Massius is homeless. He's lost his farm.
I remember this guy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good that you remember this guy, because I was about to quote SpongeBob and say, who are these people?
I had to consult the wiki for this, but Massius was in season one, and he was like in an early episode when Varinus was like convincing Massius to accept the land out in some wherewithal place to retire as a veteran.
Well, that's too bad.
Caesar wanted to give all the soldiers the land, and they were like upset about it, so he put Varinus on the case.
Yeah, exactly. Two other things I wanted to note. Another cool set design thing. Massius greets Polo, calling him a black dog. And then, like, they're doing this greeting right beneath a poster of three dogs. One is white, one is black, one is red. And it says Elverinus. And so I think that's interesting symbolism. That. And also, this had my funniest moment of the episode. Massius says he wants to work for Polo and Verinus, even if it's going to be a dark road, which Polo says, are you sure you want to do this? It could be a dark road. And then Massius says, all roads lead to the same place, which I know he means death, but it also goes to our modern saying of all roads lead to Rome, which is just hilarious.
Massius has heard about the black-hearted villain named Verinus, who's in with the gods below. And Verinus smiles wickedly at this when he is seeing Massius for the first time and trying to get an explanation about this. But it is worrying Polo. And as Jacob quoted earlier, what more can the gods do to me? Verinus asks. And don't know, Polo says, I don't want to find out.
They talked about gods a lot in this episode, too. I heard Juno's name uttered like at least 10 times. By the grace of Juno, Juno's word I can't say. Like,
if you were you would say it.
Yeah. If I was I would say it.
Well, there's already another bleep that has to come in for Cade, not just because of my swearing. Thanks a lot, Cole Lorenzo. Cicero pays a visit to Servilia, who is thrilled about the news of Octavian's bold initiative, believing that the family divided will destroy itself. Though Cicero doubts the boy will be a true rival to Antony. Servilia believes Caesar chose him for a reason, but she also thinks that the Senate should ask her son to return. And as Cicero talks of caution, waiting to see what develops, Servilia is not very impressed with this.
Did this feel like to anyone else more two-facing from Cicero?
Yes.
Like, he's very purposeful about his words. He's like, and tell Brutus his friends will miss him and will be happy to see him again soon. And it's like, okay, very purposeful not to include yourself, Cicero.
Yeah, I totally agree, Jacob. And I can't tell if, like, Cicero wants Brutus out because he thinks it's going to be too explosive, or if Cicero thinks that if Brutus comes back, then he is going to lose his influence and power, and he wants to hold on to that. I'm not sure at this point.
And another L for Attia. She returns to Octavian's room to find a note bidding her farewell, and a good moment for Octavian, even though it's in writing. I hope in time you will understand the gravity of your mistake. It is chef's kiss. Determined to pursue a political career, he's headed south for Campania to stay with a friend, Agrippa, as he is established there. And Octavian rides on horseback, accompanied by several servants and guards. They pass by a large slave transport full of bodies chained together, and they are moaning in pain. But in the very back, the thing I called in a breakout room yesterday with Cole, Verinus's kids, alive, and they were sold into slavery and are grouped together with a look of hopelessness. Dun, dun, dun. And that is season 2, episode 2 of Rome, Son of Hades.
I knew it too. I never said it out loud, but I knew it. I was thinking the whole time.
Yeah, we discussed it in the break. Like, those kids are not dead.
Okay. I didn't, like, if I had even asked last time, like, that would have let the cat out of the bag, I think. So, all right, you guys all thought they were alive, though. Okay. Before we get on to question time, more breakout rooms, guys, I just wanted to do really quick vibe check. Did you like this episode more than the season opener? I, in short, enjoyed this episode more, I gotta say, personally.
I liked it less, but I still liked it. I thought it was really good.
But it had Cleopatra in it.
You got me there.
I gotta say, I think I liked last episode more, but I think I liked specific scenes in this episode more than a lot of the scenes in the last episode.
Okay.
I like this episode a lot more, and it's because I think it counters the criticism I had from the previous episode, is that there are moments in this episode that really do get a chance to kind of be fleshed out a bit more. And even quick scenes, they do come
especially
back
that random
them.
Guy that
that's what I'm talking that's what I'm trying to get to, Cole. We're BP is like, yeah, we gotta let these scenes breathe. What about letting I cannot
hey,
oh, no.
Hey, there is one scene in this entire episode that may feel irrelevant versus the previous episode where there's just so much hopping around. Whereas this one has like,
I know, I'm having a laugh. Like, eh.
But
I'm joking.
Good episode. I liked it more than the previous one personally.
All right, so we'll get breaking out. Colin BP. I have a couple of questions. I'm curious, when and how do you predict Octavian will return to Rome? I want to mention a previous example here. Early season one, Polo and Varinus departed for what they thought would be forever. Next episode, they're back at it and have stayed that way, basically. So I'm curious, how many episodes might it be until we see Octavian again? How do you predict he will return? What might the circumstances be? And a follow-up, do you think his actions in this episode will meaningfully undermine Antony's authority like Cicero and Servilia hope?
Just the two of us.
All right. Jacob, how are you feeling about history and its depiction this episode?
So, I had a thought here, right? Now that this Mark Antony-Cleopatra dynamic has been introduced, I feel like I have the recollection that, of course, Antony was cheating on some partner back in Rome. And I know for certain that in the real history, their name is not Attia. But for the life of me, I cannot remember the name of the actual woman.
I think it was, I think at this time, it was Octavia, if I am not mistaken.
Yeah. Okay. Fictionalized anyway, right?
Right, right.
Right. So what else? That's the one specific thing I noted to ask about. Well, I mean, this was a great episode because like to talk about my favorite moment of the episode after this segment, I have to talk to you now about Octavian and what he will become because I cannot reveal too much to BP and Cole.
Right, right.
Like obviously Octavian goes on to become Augustus and like this like bloodthirsty like leader and warrior.
It's awesome.
And yeah. And so this episode is just kind of like the birth of all of it. Like we've seen him be very mature and intelligent throughout the show so far, but like here he finally like is taking a stand and like, you know, he's like, I know what I have to do and I don't like how Mark Antony is leading. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take matters in my own hand. And, you know, I've been dealt a good hand. I'm the legal son of Julius Caesar. And it sets the stage for a lot. And I even maybe this is me like looking into things too much in that scene where Antony just beats him up. That scene starts out with him like laying in bed and like oversleeping.
Yeah.
And at first I thought that was like him being ill because like that's something that happens famously in like his first couple major wars. Right. He's like away from battle for like 6 months or so because he's ill. And so maybe I'm reaching too far into my bag there to say that that is foreshadowing for that. But if so, kudos.
Well, if I may reach for your bag, Jacob, I didn't even think of that. So good draw from there. Mm-hmm. a couple things I wanted to note about history in this episode. It's worth mentioning Cleopatra was actually literally in Rome when the Ides of March actually happened, which is, I don't know, interesting. And actually, now that I say this aloud, you know, in HBO's Rome, it's the calends of February, the end of February, that is when Caesar gets assassinated. So maybe it has just been 2 weeks, and this actually is the Ides of March now, and she's in town. I don't know. Maybe that actually does. Maybe that is not ahistorical, I guess. But what is ahistorical is that Cleopatra and Antony first meaningfully meeting did not happen in Rome. It would have been out in the eastern provinces, and Cleopatra famously arrived late on a very lavish boat to impress and seduce Antony, and it freaking worked. Which kind of, you know, we see that start to blossom this episode.
Sure, yeah.
Egyptian grain is a bargaining chip brought up this episode, which and I don't understand why, but is historically true because apparently the Italian peninsula could not supply enough grain to its capital city of Rome. And so the import of Egyptian grain was pretty nice and necessary. And Egypt with the Nile is a pretty fertile place in the ancient world. And so that's cool to see brought up, in my opinion. Final thing I wanted to talk about was the references to Hades and Dis and death this episode. So Hades, you know, Greek god of death. Dis is like the Roman name for him, basically. But it's also something of like a euphemism for death, because the ancient Greeks, and I'm assuming Romans as well, I learned this in my mythology class last spring, like they didn't actually love to say the name of the god Hades, because it's literally invoking the god of death and the underworld and all that entails. And we see that in our modern society with all of our euphemisms for death, like you kicked the bucket or you passed away. So Dis is something of a euphemism for Hades. And so when Varinus actually shouts out and proclaims he is a son of Hades, it's got an extra cultural weight there. But that's basically everything I had to spout off here, Jacob.
My last thing was I got excited when we got the Agrippa mention.
Oh my God, end. I mean.
Yeah, which is actually kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, relevant to the whole Egyptian grain thing, because, you know, that becomes contentious during like, or like maybe that's just, maybe I'm misremembering. Maybe like barbarians, whatever, plundered those trade lines and they needed, I can't remember.
I remember you're thinking of, you're thinking of Sextus Pompey disrupting trade and Agrippa solving that for Octavian.
Yes,
you're right there, Jacob. Unfortunately, the
I don't think that probably happens in the scope of this show.
Right.
But yeah.
Right.
But noteworthy.
Agrippa being brought up is so great, and I'm gonna predict that Agrippa is gonna be one of BP's favorite characters in particular.
I'm so glad he appears. That was my question. I didn't even know we're actually gonna see him.
Oh, we are. We are. Yeah. It's gonna be great. Okay, we'll let the boys back in though.
You two have settle out your grievances and your marriage, mom and dad.
Yeah, we're getting a divorce.
Shoot.
Awesome.
So if I haven't had enough of that in my life.
Oh my.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I gotta go.
Fellas, we can go ahead and talk about favorite moments from this episode and any least favorite moments that we might have had. These breakout rooms have jacked up my screen a little bit, so I'm just going to go first since I can't see your faces for a reaction here. My favorite moment of the episode is Antony talking to Varinus. And as we all acknowledge, Antony was like on one this episode, just like full bore. But it made me realize that Antony is capable of like playing different characters, quote unquote, around different people, or just like is very cognizant of how he presents himself. In most scenes, including this episode, he is very arrogant to people like Cicero and Cleopatra, who he does not fully have on his side, which is just part of his swag and charm. But then when he talks to Varinus, and Jacob noted this and Cole noted this, BP noted this, there's like a total tone shift when he is talking to an absolute subordinate, Varinus. Antony is literally quieter, he is quite cruel, and he smartly manipulates Varinus into working for him. He breaks him down a little bit before he offers him a way out to build him back up. He says that he swore a sacred oath to the 13th, to me, that no one, even you, Lucius, is not beyond redemption, because he recognizes Varinus needs a purpose, and Antony, maybe not, I don't know, the smartest political operator, but he played Varinus like a fiddle here.
Great scene. Agree.
That was also my favorite scene, but I will give another scene a shout out, and that is the scene with Atia and Antony confronting Octavian about the money being given to the public.
You shut your mouth, BP. That's also my favorite scene.
Hey, Cole, you shut your mouth. That's my favorite scene you're talking about.
Sorry that I had to pick it as my second, Cole, but I also loved the scene because it goes to show you that there is, and it is an answer to your question, Kay, does what Octavian did undermine Antony? And that answer is yes, in both mine and Cole's opinion. And even though Octavian
says, didn't ask. I'm so sorry, guys. Wait.
And the reason why, even though he says it's not intentional for him to undermine him, it really is a way to do it because Octavian is so done with what Adia is trying to do and what Mark Antony is trying to do. He is really trying to just like do a complete clean slate on the Roman political spectrum. And he is really trying to bring a new sense of change to the leadership. And he knows that this is a way to do it. He knows that he has to go over Mark Antony's head in order to do it and use his small but influential power to make it happen. And the fight between Antony and Octavian is, like you said, Kay, you could turn the laugh track on it and it's hilarious, but it's also a pretty tensed up moment. And just the buildup to everything that is going to possibly happen for the rest of the season with the family is really interesting, in my opinion. And I think Servilia and Cicero predicted it correctly, that this would divide them and tear them apart.
Okay. Let's keep going with favorite scenes, and then we can do the post-break breakout, not breakup talk with Cole MVP there. So
I liked the scene just because, you know, my boy Octavian has remained my favorite character. He's showing up and showing out in this episode, but really that last scene, just because he was like, you know what, I don't care about their opinions, I'm going to just go out and do this. And then also him actually standing up to Adia and just like calling her out, which I think might be the first time he's done that. It maybe he did when he slept with his sister, but you know, that this seems a better justification for him to go against her.
Kay's favorite episode.
Yeah, and I like this scene a lot as well. It's my favorite. For a lot of reasons I already mentioned to Kay, so I'll keep it brief. This is like, this is kind of like in Gilmore Girls, where
guy who's only seen Gilmore Girls. This is like Gilmore Girls.
So Rory at 16, her grandparents force her to have to come out. It's a debutante ball thing. It's an old proper English or American tradition. You know, you attend these debutante balls and it's called your coming out party. And this is Octavian's coming out party. And he's the belle of the ball, baby. That's why it's my favorite.
All right. Okay. So before we tackle least favorites, if there's any, Cole MVP, I'm sorry, I entirely forgot to have you guys share what you thought. So you guys agree, it sounds like, that yes, Octavian's move here is going to undermine Antony in this near future, correct?
Yes.
All right. How about that first part I asked, though? Octavian, how many episodes might he be gone to your prediction, and under what circumstances might he come back?
I am thinking, and we were pretty much in agreement on this, that Octavian is going to come back in like 2, maybe 3 episodes, you know, enough for some time to pass, let him like really establish himself like out in the wider world of Rome. And he's going to come back to start acting on some plans to remove Mark Antony from power and kind of establish himself as the guy in Rome.
The big dog?
Well, there can only be one big dog, but I think Octavian can be the big guy.
The beast of a different kind.
Kay is probably the only one that'll get it. I could see them just dueling it out, and Octavian just goes, "May my knife chip and shatter."
Is that a TV show reference?
It's a movie and a book reference.
That's why I don't get it.
Because you can't read. That's like kind of like what the sign said. Callback. Okie doke. Anyone had a least favorite moment of the episode to share?
I didn't really. I was just still confused by the scene with the little boy.
Yeah, he wasn't okay. Just to the show's credit, not the small of a boy. Still not okay, yeah, probably, but like
until I'm proven otherwise, with all these weird random small characters having their cool moments in the sun, I'm just left confused. But I won't say any of those are my least favorite until we get the payoff. And so maybe on the last episode of the series, I'll reflect and say if that's my least favorite episode,
or maybe that'll be your favorite.
Yeah.
Well, all right, guys, we'll kind of get to wrapping here. If you want to learn more about the real history of Rome as adapted from this episode, you can listen to Death of the Roman Republic, Chapter 15, Chaos is a Ladder. I feel like I'm going to be saying that one for a while, if I'm being honest. But that kind of covers the immediate aftermath of the Ides of March. Of course, listen to the whole main series of Death of the Roman Republic, because it's 3 years old now, and it's kind of funny how the TikTok references I put in there in and of themselves have dated themselves, and now you get kind of an ironic chuckle out of it. I don't know. Maybe I have some regrets, but who else has some promo?
My name is Jacob. I'll go. My name is Jacob. You can follow me on Twitter at SoupCatFishYOLO. That's spelled how you think it is, baby. I tweet. That's all I got.
You can follow my movie review podcast at BP Movie Review Hour on Spotify. You can follow me on Twitter if your data limit reach has not happened yet.
Okay.
At BP Movie Review Hour.
Two episodes in a row?
Exactly. And you can follow me on Letterboxd, BP Movie Review Hour.
I don't have anything for you to follow me on, but we'll see where the next week takes us.
With all that being said, friends, Romans, countrymen, I hope you enjoyed the show.
Excellent job, BP. Excellent, excellent.
Nailed it.
When I host, I'm going to get out my trumpet and learn how to play the tune.
Do you have a trumpet? Badly.
I have a trumpet.
You didn't sell that? You like took the time and effort to transport a trumpet?
It's easy. One little small case.
Yeah.
Maybe I should hunt down my harmonica and learn to play it for one of mine.
Or that don't. Would be it's so funny cool. If you don't.
Ha 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 ha.